Star Walker Studios presents Star Citizens United, a podcast dedicated to making the most of the future hit PC video game, Star Citizen. Greetings, citizen, and welcome to the Star Citizens United podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I'll talk about education and religion in the UEE, and I'll discuss the Office of Executive Services, Star Citizen's version of the CIA. Hello, listener. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to episode 11 of Star Citizens United. I'm so glad you're joining me for another episode, and once again, I'm going to be digging into the lore of Star Citizen that is quickly developing for this game already. This week, I will be talking about the material in the Writer's Guide Part 10. So you can find this on the Robert Space Industries website. I will have a link directly to this article in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. So this week's article is all about the people in the UEE, and specifically it is about education and religion in Star Citizen. So the integration of technology into society in the game has given pretty much everyone access to basic education if they want it. The baseline of schooling is done through the glass or computer systems. A variety of companies, through imperial subsidies, have created learning programs capable of educating children to achieve equivalency, which is the equivalent of high school education. These programs tend to be used on frontier planets and other rural environments that lack ready access to an actual school. The problem is that there is little customized learning for the student. It's basically multiple choice quizzes, so there's very little opportunity to develop interpretive thought. It's essentially just teaching the facts, so kind of like school today. There's also very little repercussion if the student fails a sequence or stops altogether, which is often the case. The next step is a public school, which offers teachers, but in which, depending on the population, the class sizes can easily spiral out of control. Some public schools in the megacities, for example, can have upwards of 500 students in an elementary classroom. Man, I'll bet that's a zoo. In this kind of environment, most of the teaching is done through glass, but there is a teacher who will handle the occasional question and grade essays. The third step is a private academy, which, while expensive, offers the finest educational services from qualified teaching professionals. These academies will offer scholarships to exceptional students, but many argue that this is simply to access increased budgetary support from the UEE. After achieving equivalency, which again is the equivalent of high school graduation, a student has several options. She can enter the workforce, join the military, or pursue higher education. While entering the workforce doesn't usually require a certificate of equivalency, the military and universities do. The military offers equivalency courses to committed applicants and can waive its equivalency requirement if the recruit possesses quote-unquote desirable skills. Since higher education alone does not qualify someone for citizenship, a large number of college graduates will still join the military. Now, while there's a blanket of security throughout many of the UEE systems, particularly the more populated ones, the persistent dangers of space have helped create a culture of military service. Some view military service as a matter of duty. Others see it as simply a faster, although perhaps potentially dangerous, way to attain citizenship. And still others see the military as enforcers of an authoritarian government that tries to hide behind a friendly, progressive facade, but will still authorize bombings on Cathcart and covert strikes into Xi'an space. In other words, the public's reaction to the military is varied. Again, due to the prevalence of military service, a lot of the population has either served in the military or they know someone who has. So next, we'll go a little bit into religion in the UAE. Although there isn't an official religion recognized by the UAE and the cosmic landscape is dominated by science, there is still a need for the divine in humanity. Without getting into specifics, it's safe to say that the predominant religions of today exist in the future in some form. Many of the religions have adapted with the times, incorporating alien species into their doctrine, for example, and those that haven't are slowly withering. The millennia-long grudges and intolerance between the religions has cooled, partially due to distance between worlds. If you don't like someone, you can move millions of miles away from them. But also because exposure to the Xi'an, the Banu, the Tavaran, and the Vondul has strengthened the commonality between humans and created a humans-first, theology-second mentality. A handful of new religions have sprung up as well. Some are crossovers from alien species. For instance, there are human traders who keep trinkets of Khasa, the Banu patron of luck. And some of these religions are new. The newest belief systems tend to be humanist in nature rather than overtly religious. Here is one of the more popular new beliefs, which is the Church of the Journey. The Church of the Journey celebrates the experiences gained over the destination. Life is what matters along the way. Missionaries are called journeymen and often spend their time wandering through the systems in the pursuit of knowledge through experience. So a holiday recognized by the Church of the Journey is called Traveler's Day, and this is on sundown on the first day of a new orbit, basically New Year's. Due to the variety of orbital periods, this is different for every planet, and it's not a single standardized day. It's a metaphorical celebration of the beginning of a new journey. The devout usually meet at a church or gathering place and go on a symbolic pilgrimage through the night to a new destination. Now, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about the Church of the Journey or learning about Traveler's Day, there was a dispatch that was done on this topic, and the dispatches are in-world, in-game, in-character news updates, basically. So I will have that linked in the show notes, and you can check that out. So if we're going to talk about religion, we kind of have to wonder, how do aliens and non-human civilizations affect this? Because a component of some, at least, current religions is the belief that humans are something special, and discovery of alien civilizations would definitely call that into question. So even though humanity may not interact with alien life as part of their everyday existence, aliens are a part of life. Are there still people who support a strictly and even violent pro-human agenda? Sure. Are there cases of discrimination based on species? Yes. But first contact was over 500 years ago, so the majority of humanity has gotten used to aliens. Therefore, while it's considered socially unacceptable to launch into a vicious rant in public, there are still people, even groups, that view aliens as either inferior or mortal enemies. For this next part, we are going to part 13 of the Writer's Guide. So this is about the Office of Executive Services, or the OES, which is basically the United Empire of Earth's kind of version of the CIA. Long hidden between an innocuous name within the labyrinthine bowels of the Senate's budget, the OES is responsible for the collection, analysis, or exploitation of information and intelligence in support of law enforcement, imperial security, defense, and foreign policy objectives. This can take on many forms, from communication intercepts to asset gathering to counterintelligence to black ops and alien civilizations. The OES utilizes operatives throughout the empire on both domestic and foreign missions. Since it has never been officially recognized, no one really knows when the OES was created. The first known mention of the OES came in the archive of the Senate subcommittee meeting in 2794, but the first potential indication of an OES action came 6 years later in 2788. Nathan Warrick, an advocacy section chief in the Terra system, helped facilitate Senator Akari's meetings with the Xi'an to create the Kray/Akari Treaty that diffused tensions with the Xi'an and marked the beginning of the end of the Messer era. After that incident, Warrick left the advocacy and disappeared. After the fall of Messer, Warrick reappeared as a quote-unquote consultant on Akari's staff before being named as the first director of the new Office of Executive Services during that Senate subcommittee meeting in 2794. Terrified at the prospect of another despot, the Senate wanted to make sure they were kept informed of the mood of the people as well as the atmosphere of the other branches of the UEE. The Office of Executive Services was designed to infiltrate, keeping an eye not only on the public, but also the military and even the advocacy. The Senate Subcommittee for Internal Appraisal handles budgetary and executive oversight of the OES. Again, the official incarnations of this elusive spy agency are designed to be forgettable, hence the bland names. Field agents for the OES actively recruit assets within and without the UEE to keep the Senate apprised of potential crises and growing threats to imperial security. Known as OES associates, they are charged with digging up information or turning assets over for OES analysis to consume. Even the Oversight Committee has no idea how the OES recruits its associates. Its strength is that its agents can be anyone, so their recruitment path is personality-based more than physical. They want adaptive, intuitive, and intelligent people who are capable of being present but not being noticed, or at least being forgotten soon after. The existence of the OES is still heavily guarded. The Imperator, the military, and the advocacy are all aware that the Senate has a clandestine agency at their disposal, but having to sift through wild conjecture and unreliable sources, they can't isolate exactly where it is or even who's in charge. Also, associates embedded within those organizations are very good at disrupting any potential leads. That isn't to say that the OES is an open book to all of the Senate. Senators have to be in office for several terms before they are brought into the fold about the agency's existence. There are many in the public who hear whispers of senatorial spies. Some have unknowingly worked jobs for the OES, but deniability has been the OES' prime directive since its inception, and thus far, they haven't been caught. So there you go. There's a little bit about the OES, the Office of Executive Services. Now, this sounds really cool, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this is implemented in the game and how we as players of Star Citizen can interact with the OES and even work for the OES. And I think it would be really fun if you had a quest line or a chain of missions where you're working for the OES, and maybe, you know, in the beginning, you don't even know that you're working for the OES. You're just working for someone and doing various things that seem unconnected, maybe working for various people doing various things that seem unconnected. And then eventually, you know, if you keep up with it long enough, you find out, oh, I'm actually working for the OES, and I have been for quite some time. And then there comes the thing of trying to figure out exactly, you know, what is the design behind these seemingly unconnected missions that you've been doing that now you just realize actually are connected and in some kind of scheme, and trying to figure out and putting together the clues of what that scheme is. And then once you figure out or think you figure out what the scheme is, well, what if it's something that you really don't want to be involved in or something you really don't want to be supporting? You know, what then? So I think that would be a lot of fun. That would be a really fun storyline to play through, you know, because you start out just doing, you know, random, seemingly innocuous missions for various NPCs. And then eventually you start kind of putting together these clues and realizing, you know, these NPCs seem to be connected in some way, or these missions I'm doing seem to be connected in some way. And, you know, it'd be great if it didn't like spell it out for you, if you actually had to do some deductive reasoning and do some investigating to even figure out that you're actually working for the OEE. And then maybe, you know, you can have this kind of climactic encounter where you confront one of the PCs and maybe put the screws to them and get them to admit, yeah, we're working for the OEE. And then trying to figure out and, you know, investigate and piece together, well, what is the point? Like, why does the OEE want me doing these things? You know, what's the end game here? And then figuring that out and realizing that you're involved in something you don't want to be involved in, and you've actually set something in motion that now that you know what's going on, you want to stop it, maybe. Or, you know, what would be great is at that point, the game gives you a choice, right? Like, you can either keep doing what you're doing, keep working for these people, and maybe even become affiliated with the OEE, maybe even become an operative of the, is it even OEE? The OES, whatever it's called. But yeah, you know, making a decision where you can either become an operative for the OES and start working for them, you know, knowingly and advancing in ranks and prestige and everything within that organization, or deciding that you don't want to be involved with this and you don't like what they're trying to do and trying to work at cross purposes with the OES. Either way, that could be a lot of fun. And yeah, I think it'd be great if you could have that choice. And then you would open up a whole new realm of possibilities depending on which of those choices you made. So this is really great stuff. And, you know, this is all, you know, we're very early in the creation of the game now. So, you know, we can speculate all day about how these various lore elements are going to be put into play in the game. But it's really exciting that there is so much going into it already, into the lore, and that we have so much to kind of work through about what's out there. And knowing CIG, you know, they're not going to develop this stuff and then not do anything with it, right? And, you know, they've talked about how, you know, they want the NPCs to be more than just these little bots going around doing repetitive actions. Like, they're going to be entities that you can interact with who have their own objectives and their own plans and things like that. And so stuff like, you know, what we were just talking about with the OES and how that comes into play, I think will be really interesting. And I think eventually, if not right away, will be something that you'll be able to interact with in some way, shape, or form in the game. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 11 of Star Citizens United. Thanks again for tuning in and going into the lore of the game with me. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Google+. Just look for Lex Starwalker, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website, starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find the show notes and the links to the articles I talked about today. And you can also find all of our other great podcasts that we produce. If you enjoy Star Citizens United and you'd like to support the show and support the studio and keep us going, we would really appreciate it. A great way that you could do so is to become a patron of the show. You can visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/StarCitizensUnited and become a patron there. And we have some fun little rewards and thank yous for you for doing so. If you would prefer to just give us a one-time donation, you can do that via our donate button at the top of the page at starwalkerstudios.com. So once again, thank you so much for downloading and listening to Star Citizens United. I really appreciate it. I'm really enjoying doing this podcast, and I've heard from quite a few listeners who enjoy these lore episodes and appreciate, you know, me going through this for you so that you can, you know, listen to these podcasts when you have time and kind of get caught up on the lore of the game. I am going to keep doing this. As of now, there are, I believe, 27 writer's guide parts, and I've gotten through part 13. So there's quite a bit more to cover, and that's just what's out today. And I'm sure, you know, there's going to be more in the future, and there's going to be more to talk about Star Citizen related. And then once the game's actually out, I mean, then it's really going to open up and we're going to have tons of stuff to talk about. So if there is something specific you would like me to talk about on the show, or if you have a question or just any thoughts or anything like that, feel free to shoot me an email, scupodcast@gmail.com. Once again, I am Lex Starwalker, and I will see you out there. This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. Please see all that Starwalker Studios has to offer at starwalkerstudios.com.